Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, logging a case in appellate court. Luke files suit against his wife, Elena. They live in an old converted schoolhouse in Vermont and heat their home using a wood stove. Luke loves the wood stove, but Elena would like to replace it with a stove that burns pellets instead. Who's right? Who's wrong? Only one can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom and presents an obscure cultural reference.
Everything is more complicated than you think. You only see a tenth of what's true. There are a million little strings attached to every choice you make. You can destroy your life every time you choose. But maybe you won't know for 20 years, and you'll never ever trace it to its source, and you only get one chance to play it out. And they say that there's no fate, but there is. It's what you create. Bailiff Jesse Thorne, please swear the litigants in.
Luke, Elena, please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling despite the fact that he makes his own heat?
I do.
Judge Hodgman, you may proceed.
I actually run fairly cold. Did you know that, Jesse?
No.
It's very rare that my body temperature will be above 98. I'm keeping it cool in my core temp. I'm sorry, Luke and Elena. It's nice to see you here on this Zoom where you are in Vermont. I am now back in Brooklyn, New York. You are already seated and you may remain seated for an immediate summary judgment. By the way, hello, Jennifer Marmer. Hello, Jesse. Nice to see you guys. Welcome back to Live Litigants. Luke and Elena, nice to see you as well. So
nice
let's
to
get
see you.
All right. That's enough fellowship.
Yeah, we've rollicked enough.
Yeah, let's get into contention mode for an immediate summary judgment in one of your favors. Can either of you name the piece of culture that I referenced just now? Elena, why don't you guess first?
Oh, I missed it.
Okay,
Flash,
good. Luke?
Flash Man.
I know, look, it's been a long time. It's been a long time since we had a live litigant case. We forget how we do it. You know, it's easy. I almost forgot to even have a cultural reference. So you missed it. That's fine. Fair enough. What's your guess, though? What would be your guess?
She's stunned silent. I think that... In Vermont, justice works differently. You just take your issue to Ben or Jerry.
That's right. You gotta take it to the court of fish.
Yeah.
Gotta take it direct. Mike Gordon, the basis for fish, dispenses justice up there in Vermont. No, Elena, just give me a guess, any kind of guess.
I'm gonna say Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon?
Yeah.
The comic strip or the movie?
I'd say the comic strip.
Whoa. Okay. Deep cuts.
Yeah.
I would have been inclined to say the theme song from the movie.
He's just a man with a man something.
Flash.
Luke, it's your turn to guess.
I guess what I'm thinking now, because we were talking about cults earlier. The Source Family documentary.
The Source Family documentary.
Yeah, big up Father Yode.
That's right.
Luke is
referencing a pre-show conversation we were having, establishing intimacy, rapport. But that I will punish. Because that guess is wrong. Indeed, all guesses are wrong. Although that, the Source Family documentary is a great documentary. And in the plugs, when we plug our stuff, I'm going to plug another documentary about a communal living situation that took me by surprise. You already know about it, Luke, because we have this background together. Stay tuned to the plugs. You'll find out about a good one. But all guesses are wrong. That was actually a quote from a movie that I will confess I have not seen, Synecdoche, New York, by Charlie Kaufman. And it's a quote about big decisions, because this is a bigger decision than some of the ones we face on Judge John Hodgman. This is a serious impact decision, wood stove or pellet stove, because when you are in the cold and dark of winter, say in New England, and the furnace breaks and you don't have a secondary source of heat, you are in big trouble. This is something I've learned the hard way twice, once in Massachusetts and once in Maine. And something that I happen to know, the screenwriter Charlie Kaufman has learned recently once in an unnamed location. I will not explain more. Because it doesn't have to be in New England that this happened. Warmth is one of those things that it is easy to get used to, depending on where you live and how reliable your heat is. And to not plan properly for if you lose it suddenly once you have gotten used to it. You all are in Vermont. And so you know, feeling your house go cold is one of the most helpless and terrifying. And it's a shameful feeling, too, because you feel like you've really messed up. In my case, I really did mess up. I forgot to have the guy come and fill the oil tank. That was a mistake that I made. And the oil tank went, I talked about it before. And luckily, we had a wood stove in the basement. And when you're firing that wood stove, the panic that you feel stoking that fire is very, very deep. And if you can't get a fire going or you have no secondary source of heat, then you have to go flee to strangers. Now, in both cases, a wood stove came to my rescue, once in Massachusetts, once in Maine. I like wood stoves, you know, but I'm biased, I guess, but I'm not going to recuse myself because I want to hear both sides, Luke's side and Elena's side. So, given that this is very serious and I'm going to make a decision for your lives together, I have some serious questions I have to ask you first, okay? First of all, Luke and Elena, do you have power currently?
We do.
Yeah, because it was a big windstorm.
Yes, it was.
We're recording this in our timeline. This is March, and there was a huge windstorm in the Northeast. And I know that it knocked out power in a lot of places. Did you lose power?
Not yet.
Yeah, the gusts were like 40 miles an hour this morning.
Yeah.
It was -2 when I woke up.
So right.
We were almost thinking like, gosh, like we might need to go record somewhere else because we might lose power.
Yeah, so. No. I mean, do you have a generator?
We do not.
Okay, interesting. So next big serious question. Do you have a dog named Lamb Job?
We do indeed.
All right, good. We'll put a pin in that. Yes. We'll come back to that. I just wanted to verify that that was true.
He's sitting right behind my thing.
Yeah, he's sitting right behind your computer. Okay.
Lamb Job.
He's present.
Let the record show that... that Luke has switched camera view on his tablet to Lamb Chop lying on a couch under a blanket because I guess it's chilly there.
It's a little cold here.
What would the temperature be like in your house, would you say now, in Fahrenheit, if you please? I mean, I know you all flirt with Celsius up there in Vermont, but Fahrenheit, what would you guess?
I'd say in the room I'm in, I feel like it's about 62 to 65.
You know, right?
That's I'm cold a little far away from the wood stove.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
And Luke, where in Vermont are you?
We are in the town of West Corinth, Vermont.
West what now?
Corinth.
All right. I'm looking it up. Let's see if this is a real town.
Some people say Corinth, but that is incorrect. I got you. It is Corinth.
Some of the locals would say that Corinth is the original way to say it. So I think the record should show.
How do you say it?
Well, we don't count. We're not Vermonters.
I'm just, Elena, what? Corinth or Corinth?
Corinth. Yeah.
This is a classic battle, John. You don't know about this? This is like, who invented the French dip? Philippe's the original or Coles?
I'll call it, I pronounce it cornhole. West Cornhole, Vermont. It's a very good game. It's a great game. I'm not dissing your town. Corinth, all right. West Corinth, Vermont. I see it here. It's in this triangle between St. Johnsbury, Montpelier, I believe the capital of Vermont.
Mm-hmm. Correctamundo. Yeah.
And then down in the bottom of the triangle, just over the Connecticut River, is Lebanon, New Hampshire, where David Reese and I once did a show. Lovely, lovely part of the world. Okay, so we know where you are in Vermont. That's fairly far north. So let me ask Elena, let me ask you this question. Why in Vermont are you?
Well, Vermont just is. Vermont takes you in and it shapes you.
But you have said that you are not Vermonters.
Correct. I did start my journey in the Northeast. I started in Rochester, New York, and I went down the East Coast to Asheville, North Carolina, eventually, where I met my dashing husband. And then we decided
Let
we
the
had
record
enough.
Show that Luke believes that is him. He raised his hand. You left Asheville, which is a beautiful, beautiful town in western mountain town in western North Carolina, where I also did a show with David Reese, by the way. That would be a place to stay. A lot of people choose to stay in Asheville, North Carolina, but you said, let's go to Vermont. How'd that happen, Elena?
God, you know, it's something about Vermont. It's magical. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been to Vermont.
Yeah,
I've been to Brattleboro. I've been to Burlington. Yeah. I've been to St. Johnsbury. Probably drove through West Corinth on the way to Lebanon, New Hampshire. I stayed on the shores of Lake Champlain. What?
That's dairy country.
That's right. I've been to the Boomerang Thrift Shop in Brattleboro, Vermont. That's right. That's basically Massachusetts. But yeah, I love Vermont. Of course, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I mean, when did you? Who initiated this move? I guess is what I'm asking.
Oh God, was it me, hon? Or you?
I mean, I would say you initiated, but we both were like, yeah, let's move back up to New England. I mean,
where are you from originally, Luke?
I grew up in the town of Hancock, Maine.
In the town of Hancock, Maine. No kidding.
Yes. Hancock County, Maine.
Yeah. I got you, pal.
Closer to Ellsworth than the Hancock Point.
I'm really trying to lay off the Maine stuff because it was just so Maine-y for so long on the show. I'm really trying to give people a break. It's bad enough that we're doing Vermont now. Do you know what I mean?
Vermont. So, Vermont's magical. It sucks you in.
Do you guys want me to just list towns in Southern California? Fontana, Torrance,
yeah.
City of Industry.
Sadly, the federal equal time requirements were repealed under the Reagan administration.
Chino Hills.
Rancho Cucamonga.
I understand, Luke, you're trying to establish intimacy and rapport and to win this thing. But I got to lay off the Maine where we got to stay in the Green Mountain State.
Understood.
Yeah. So it was fairly mutual, and it's not like one of you got dragged up there by the other's dreams or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very mutual decision.
That was a very vocal yes from Luke and a kind of resigned, slow nod of the head from Elena. But you said that this was partly your, this is your dream too, correct? Yes or no?
Yes. I do love Vermont. Vermont is charming. I'm so cold and I would love a consistent heat source such as a pellet stove.
Right. Okay. Well, let's talk about your home, which is a converted schoolhouse. That was a decision. And it is heated with one heat source. Is that correct? Currently a wood stove. Is that right?
So our home is currently heated with a wood stove and baseboard heat as backup heat. So we have the baseboard heat as a source of heat for, if someone throws out their back, you know, as in the past 7 days, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and we don't want to wake up to stoke the fire. We have to rely on the backup source of heat, which would be the baseboard propane heat.
Oh, okay. You have a backup propane situation.
We do, but I don't know if you know the difference between the price of propane and more natural sources of fuel, such as wood or pellets.
I understand where you are steering the direction of this conversation, and I appreciate it. You would like to get a pellet stove. Now, I think we all know pretty much what a wood stove is. For those of you who don't know, we have evidence that has been shared. The photos of their wood stove in their converted schoolhouse will be available on the Judge John Hodgman show page at MaximumFun.org, as well as on our Instagram at Instagram.com/Judge John Hodgman. Let's take a look at the evidence just so I can describe to people who don't know what an in-house natural wood stove might be. It looks like you would imagine. There's a photo of it here. It's a squat little piece of cast iron that has swing out doors. It's sitting in the middle of this room, which I presume is fairly central in your house. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. Can I speak on the stove briefly?
Yeah, why don't you speak on the stove and then we'll move on to the pellet stove option. Tell me about your wood stove.
The company that made it is called Vermont Castings.
Mm-hmm.
The model of the stove is called the Vigilant, mm-hmm. 1977. Mm-hmm. It was made in 1977. And part of why we landed in the town of West Corinth is because Elena has not only one, but two sets of aunts and uncles that live here in Corinth.
Oh, okay.
And the wood stove came out of one of her uncle's barns.
Got it.
And so, yeah, it is, you know, a piece of history, a piece of the family. And it opens from the front, which is pretty standard for wood stoves.
Right.
But one of the reasons why I like this one so much is it has a top loader as well, which is really not as common.
Yeah, so this is a Vigilant 1977 cast iron box on a couple of on four legs on top of some soapstone or some other kind of non-burnable material on the floor. It's got swing doors in it. You put wood in there, you close the doors, and the smoke goes up this long stove pipe that goes into that then takes a turn into the chimney. It looks like you would see in a comic strip.
Yeah.
Not Flash Gordon, but you know what I mean.
I would say it's a little small for it, but looking at the picture, I could imagine a witch kicking a child into it.
And so you love this wood stove for history, the fact that it has a family connection to Elena's West Corinth avuncular family or whatever, that it came out of a barn. It's a real artisanal stove here, real 1977. Was it stuffed full of vintage vinyl when you got it out of that barn?
Covered in macrame?
Yeah.
It was covered in something.
Yeah. You put it in? Did you put it in, Luke?
I did, with the assistance of cousins and uncles when we moved into the schoolhouse.
It looks real good. It looks like a real witch kicker, as Jesse says. But how does it do for heat? I'll let Elena take this one.
Well, I'll tell you that the heat is nice. It does produce heat. It serves its purpose. I would say that a wood stove is an adequate source of heat, but a pellet stove is a consistent source of heat. And the quality of the heat doesn't change, in my opinion.
Well, you did not send in a photo, Elena, of the pellet stove that you would like to get.
I was so certain you were going to say, you didn't send in a photo, Elena, of the quality of the heat.
Yeah. Nor did you send in a photo of the heat. So it falls to you, I'm afraid, to paint a word picture for the listener who there are a lot of people who know what a Vigilant 77 cast iron wood stove out of Vermont probably looks like. But pellet stove may be a little bit more esoteric to the average listener. Get in your converted schoolhouse and teach us.
A pellet stove looks just like a wood stove if you want it to. They do make some really cool modern versions of pellet stoves these days. But a pellet stove can look very traditional as well, if that's the style that you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a cast iron even, or a glass door so that you could see the fire going nice and beautiful behind that glass door. So a pellet mm-hmm. stove looks very much like a wood stove. The heat quality, very comparable to
what
a wood stove.
What is it? I'm helping you out. What does it burn?
Pellet stoves use compacted wood. Mm-hmm. So instead of carrying in giant armfuls of logs, of pounds of wood, you carry in some pellets that are compressed wood pieces. You then put into a little canister in this the stove that looks
a hopper.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It looks just like a wood stove still, but you're putting tiny compressed wood particles instead, which then produce less ash once they've burned. They also burn for 10 or more hours, really.
Without stoking or feeding or putting more pellets in.
Yeah, all the effort that goes into maintaining a wood fire is mm-hmm. it's quite laborious.
Wait, so you literally wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to stoke the fire?
I think the first year that we lived here, we did.
And I have to interject.
I will allow it.
All of this talk about the stoking and all of the work that goes into feeding the fire, I mean, I am the one who tends to the wood stove. I order the wood, I stack the wood, and I keep the wood stove stoked, and I keep it cleaned out of ash. I've taken it on as pretty much my full responsibility.
Objection?
Elena, you have an objection.
I would like to point out that I am very willing and able, when I am capable physically, of helping to tend to the wood stove. I am recovering from endometriosis, which is part of the reason that my husband has taken on the burden of the wood stove.
Well, I hope you're feeling as okay as possible.
Thank you. And I would like to also point out that in the event that my husband's back was not at its best, you know, if someone's back were prone to being thrown out, for example, then the other partner takes on more of the labor of the wood stove. It's give and take.
Counselor, let's not be coy. Are you saying that Luke is a fragile man who's about to break at any moment? Do you say he has back problems?
I think I will let Luke speak for himself.
You know, when I carry in wood, I carry in, you know, pretty decently large armfuls of wood at a time.
What answer to what question is this? Yes or no, Luke? Do you have a trick back or no?
I work on a farm and I've thrown out my back on two occasions.
Two occasions? How recently? Within the past how many years?
Within the past 1 year.
1 year, threw out your back twice.
That is correct.
And has the house gone cold as a result?
The house has not gone cold as a result.
What do you do on the farm, Luke? You get up on some hay bales and spin some classic vinyl?
We throw some hay bales around. I take care of cows and sheep and grow vegetables and run a farm stand.
John, Vermont is dairy country.
You know what they call that work? Backbreaking work. Backbreaking work.
Yeah, I enjoy the work, and I enjoy the work that goes into tending to the wood stove as well.
Let's take a quick recess. We'll be back in just a moment on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Hello, I'm your Judge John Hodgman. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is brought to you every week by you, our members, of course. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast and all of your favorite podcasts at MaximumFun.org, and they are all your favorites. If you want to join the many member supporters of this podcast and this network, boy, oh boy, that would be fantastic. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Aura Frames.
Hey, Mother's Day is coming up. Do you have a mom in your life that you'd like to celebrate? There are very few better ways than giving an Aura frame to someone you care about. These are beautifully Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos of your memories with your mom, stepmom, mentor, friend, whatever it is in your life who might enjoy seeing photos from your life. Aura frames are the way to go.
Judge, there's a very special mom in my life, Ms. Teresa Thorne.
Yes.
That's my wife and also a whole human being in her own right. Guess what's on her bedside table? Yes, that's right. You guessed it in one, an Aura frame. What I love about the Aura frame is you don't have to load a bunch of stuff onto an SD card or whatever, like with the old digital frames. It is so easy to get the pictures on there. So like when Teresa texts me a cute picture of one of our children or our dog, or one of our siblings texts us a cute picture of one of them or one of their children, all I have to do is hit that share button on my phone and I can share it right to the frame and then it lives there for as long as I want. I can also take it off whenever I want, but I don't even have to open the Aura Frames app, which is a great app, but I don't even have to go there. It just goes straight into wherever I want it, whichever frame I want, or I have multiple Aura Frames in my house or all of them. It is incredibly easy. That's why Wirecutter chose it as the best digital photo frame. That's why it's one of Oprah's favorite things. It is guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame.
That's A-U-R-A, frames.com. Use the code Hodgman at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Stitch Fix.
You know that boost of confidence you get when you put on an outfit that just feels good? You know what that's like. That's what I get when I use Stitch Fix. With Stitch Fix, you get a human stylist, not AI. A human being who understands your style, size, and budget. They do all the shopping for you, and it's the easiest way to update your wardrobe this season or any other.
This professional stylist picks the clothes. They can either send you a box where anything you don't want is unbelievably easy to return, or they can make a little storefront for you just from stuff that they recommend for your taste and your body. It is an absolutely incredible service. They give you styling advice, outfit recommendations, the whole thing, soup to nuts. And like I said, if you don't want it, if you don't like it, it is unfathomably easy to send it back. They give you an envelope that's big enough, that has the postage and the labels on it. All you have to do is shove the thing in there, close it up, and drop it off at your local mailing center. It is that easy.
Can I also say the stuff that my stylist at Stitch Fix picks for me, I really like it. Like, they know me, and it's really terrific. Plus, if you've got small people in your life, sadly, my small people are now adults shopping for themselves. But if you've got little kids, it's a terrific way to get togs for your kids. Style that makes you feel as you want to look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/JJHO. That's stitchfix.com/JJHO. stitchfix.com/JJHO. Elena, you are young people, right? You're in your 30s, early 30s?
Oh, goodness. Thank you. Yes.
Right. Okay. And you're up there with Lamb Chop, and Luke has thrown his back out a couple of times, but for the most part, he keeps the fire going. I really need you to just tell me why you're not comfortable with the system as it is.
Maybe I could show you something.
All right. I'll allow it.
It becomes uncomfortable physically when things such as this are found in... This is a piece of moss, for those of you who aren't sure. This is moss from a piece of wood that I found in a clean pant leg as I put it on this morning.
For the record, let me let the listeners who are listening to this audio podcast know a woman in Vermont just held up a little baggie with some vegetable matter in it. This is something that has happened before. It's not that unusual. Let me just show you this little piece of vegetable matter in this little baggie in Vermont. All right, so you put that in an evidence bag. That's moss from the wood pile that you found.
That ended up in my pant.
In your pants.
And this is not an infrequent occurrence, unfortunately, Your Honor.
So it's gross, is what you're saying.
It's a little painful at times when they are more sliver sized.
We do have a photo of the woodpile, which you submitted, Luke, as evidence. And this is a very handsome woodpile, I have to say.
Thank you. I've taken a lot of pride in it.
Yeah. You have a very well-constructed looking shed that is closed on three sides, top most importantly.
Yeah. I think it's more of a lean-to.
All right. I'll call it what I want. It's a shed, wood shed, because a lean-to would be less permanent.
Hey, Luke. Stick to dairy matters.
It is keeping it sheltered from the snow and rain. Snow right now. Open on one side. What direction is that side facing, Luke? Do you happen to know?
That is the north side.
Interesting that you would have it pointing towards the north. The open part towards the north. What was your thinking there? Did you build this woodshed?
The woodshed was on the property when we moved in.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't used for wood before I started keeping the wood there. Before I was keeping wood on pallets on the other side of where we park our cars. Mm-hmm. So I get about 5 to 6 cords of wood a winter.
Oh.
And a cord is technically like a truck bed's worth of cut wood.
No, technically a cord is 128 cubic feet of wood. A stack that approximately 4 feet high, 4 feet wide, and 8 feet long.
Luke, you know probably that I hate to repeat myself, but stick to dairy matters.
So you had been stacking your wood on pallets, and then you're like, I'm going to put it in that shed. That was just your innovation, or did you read a book?
I more word of mouth garnered information from other Vermonters.
Yeah. Did they ever tell you to turn that shed around so it's facing south?
I would love to, but it might not be as easy as it sounds.
It's not a rotating shed?
No.
like Hank's look around cafe.
Sorry, then. That's my mistake, then. You're absolutely right. It is a lean-to. If it doesn't rotate, it's a lean-to. If it's on a Lazy Susan, it's a shed. Everyone knows. And I could be wrong. I could be wrong about this, but I'm just... Whatever I decide with regard to your fate, I'm going to recommend right now a book called Norwegian Wood Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way. Do you know this book, Elena? You made a little look of recognition.
No, but I'm fascinated by your knowledge and we'll take note. Thank you.
Oh, well, that the court accepts your flattery and it will get you everywhere. It's by Lars Midding. And this book, look, I know I said I wasn't going to mention Maine, but a couple of summers ago, this book burned its way through every household that we came in contact with in Maine. Everyone was talking about this book primarily for the Scandinavian style of wood stacking, because everyone was talking about their wood stacks all of a sudden and all the science of stacking logs in order to dry them and season them. In particular, the beehive method, the round method. You know what I'm talking about, Luke? I see you nodding.
I don't know round, but I've seen people do them in like a pyramid.
Yeah, no, I know what my words mean. Round is what I'm talking about.
Luke, yeah. Shut your cheese hole.
Holy cats, these round stacks. You look it up, also called a Holzhauser in Germany. But in the Scandinavian countries, they stack their wood in a big round beehive with wood in the middle. And the reason for that is to increase airflow to dry the wood as efficiently as possible. And my guess would be, and I could be wrong on this, and I look forward to your letters. Of course I do, Hodgman@MaximumFun.org. But if you didn't have a lean-to, if you had a classic shed on a Lazy Susan and you turned that thing around to the south, to your southern exposure, and get some sun on that wood, that would be a good idea. Just a thought for you.
I do get our wood already dried and seasoned, so...
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that you were cheating. Oh, I see. See, I thought this was your hobby. I thought this was your passion. I thought that the reason that you and Elena were suffering through these winters with variable heat and risking your back at every turn was because you loved this thing, this whole project. So you're buying seasoned wood, eh?
I guess that makes me a poser.
And you say 5 or 6 cords a winter?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. And what is your home insulated with? Paper mache? What are your walls made of?
We're currently... I actually had a crew over yesterday to do attic insulation. So we're working on getting our house weatherized.
Oh, that's by attic insulation, do you mean a roof? You're putting a roof on? Elena, I've avoided it for as long as possible, but now I would like you to explain your propaganda that you sent in the evidence. You sent a poster advocating for the purchase of a pellet stove. It says, pellet stoves are awesome. Tell me why pellets, this is what it says at the top of this flyer that I presume was handed to you by some cult leader at the farmer's market, and now you can't stop thinking about this.
I would just like to point out that the infographic has much more information, not just about the anatomy of a pellet here, the fact that a pellet is also at times made of things such as sawdust, waste paper, or residual forest waste. So there are wonderful environmental impacts. It's a 0% carbon footprint with a pellet stove as well.
How is that true?
Because you aren't emitting the same emissions with a pellet stove as you are with a wood stove.
According to this, it's an 85%. The EPA rates it as an 85% efficient heat source. I've heard of pellet stoves before. I've seen them advertised, and I've seen dealerships around New England and stuff. And I spent a lot of time doing some homework this morning. That was a lot of fun for me, actually. I normally don't like doing homework. But I enjoyed looking at people comparing wood stoves to pellet stoves, particularly there's a really charming YouTube of a guy at Embers Fireplaces and Outdoor Living in Denver, Colorado, as he gets a fire going in a pellet stove and in a wood stove. And he's a very sweet guy. Check that out. He spends a lot of time complaining about the sound of planes going overhead, which was really is very adorable asides. But essentially, it's a box that looks like a wood stove. It's fed by pellets in a hopper. There's an auger in there, which is like a screw that drops pellets in at an even rate to keep it burning at a consistent temperature that you choose. There's a fan that blows hot air into your world, so you will be warm. There's also, an intake fan. And the pellets themselves, you know, as your propaganda broadside points out, are recovered, you know, bits of forest waste and sawdust and, you know, recycled wood. It's not like trees, which are made in a factory. This is really natural stuff, these pellets. And you get them in big bags and you feed them into there. And it's a, because of the nature of the stove, it's, I did check out independently of the link that you sent me, Elena, you and I were thinking the same way. I did go and check out, energy.gov, because energy.gov, the federal agency, Department of Energy, has a whole article about wood stoves versus pellet stoves. And you're absolutely right that they're very efficient for and low polluting compared to a vigilant 77. And those are all good reasons to get a pellet stove. Did I make the argument fairly, would you say?
Thank you. Yes, I think you summed that up very well, Your Honor.
All right. Luke, these are some compelling arguments for a pellet stove. If I were to rule in Elena's favor, how would you feel about losing the Vigilant 77? What does having a wood stove mean to you emotionally?
You know, I like being able to keep busy. I like the lifestyle that we live up here, which is not, you know, it's not always easy, but I enjoy that kind of labor. It keeps, you know, it keeps my mind occupied and it brings me joy. Just like, you know, the work that I do on the farm with my hands. And, you know, if we're talking about like, you know, the prices for, you know, pellets versus wood, you guys were, you know, giving me some guff for getting my wood, you know, cut, dried and seasoned. I could get whole logs delivered and it would be cheaper, and I do have the equipment on the farm that I could use to cut our wood with, but the amount of time that it would take me would take away from my time of being able to enjoy the time by the wood stove, because I love, you know, doing crossword puzzles, reading, playing Nintendo by the wood stove. I mean, I love it.
Spending time with your wife. Probably you should throw that in there.
Spending time with my wife.
Yeah.
Spending time with my wife by the very romantic wood stove.
Do you feel, Elena, that you are a wood stove widow? Are you not getting enough quality time with Luke?
You know, I think our quality time would be just as well spent next to a pellet stove with that beautiful kindling fire behind the glass doors.
I have a couple.
Oh, boy. How many of a couple do you have? Points or comments or whatevers? Because I'm pretty much ready to make my decision.
I have 3 points. They're short. Mm-hmm. Short points. You know, I've been defending the wood stove, but I have points about the pellet stove, too. I don't think that they look cool. I think that they look like kind of like uncanny valley versions of wood stoves. They're kind of tacky. And the pellets that you guys talk about, they come in like 50-pound bags. So, mm-hmm. You know, if we're worried about me you know, hurting my back, I'm just as likely to, you know, hurt my back while schlepping around these large bags of pellets. And mm-hmm. it looks nowhere near as elegant as my wood stack in the shed lean-to would look, the bags of pellets.
What are the bags made? What are the bags made of?
I would assume plastic.
Yeah, where do you get them? Where do you get them from? Is there a pellet stove dealer nearby?
I don't know, but I get our wood from a guy that's.
Elena says yes, but tell me where you get your wood from.
Paul Poulin, 15 minutes down the road.
I'll let you buzz market Paul Poulin's wood lot. Elena, where are you going to get your pellet stove from? Pellets or us?
Actually, I have a coworker who told me about where they get their pellets from. That place uses recycled materials to wrap the pellets with. It's a recycled plastic. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a plastic recyclery at our local transfer station. So we could easily recycle the plastic.
How far away is your pellet dealership? Closer or further away than Paul Pool?
It's probably about 10 minutes farther, 15, something like that.
Luke, how much property do you have there?
We have 1 acre.
You have trees on it?
We do. Mm-hmm. I have one final note about the pellet stove. I'm sorry.
All right. I'll hear it.
This is my I feel like it's my ace in the hole because I haven't shared this part of my argument with Elena either.
Oh boy, everybody. So, even Elena's going to be surprised.
Where, as we were talking about the windstorms this morning, we do lose electricity pretty frequently up mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And I believe one large element of the pellet stove's hopper mechanism is powered by electricity. So, you know,
well,
one great
thing about the auger is powered by electricity and the fan that that shoots the air out is powered by electricity. There's also a circuit board in there that that is not only electrical, but requires maintenance on a regular basis, because when you put electronics next to high heat for a long period of time, that's a problem.
Well, this thing's got to plug into the wall, right? Doesn't the whole stove
that
have
usually
to plug
is a
into
sign
the
that
wall?
Is usually is a sign that something requires electricity. That's right.
Yeah,
you have propane baseboard heat. Is there a furnace somewhere?
There is. Yes, yeah. It heats our oven and our hot water
right.
as well.
Right, and so when you lose electricity because you don't have a generator, what happens to that furnace?
That ceases to function.
It ceases to function. Interesting. Mm. Interesting.
Correct. Yeah. Mm. And the wood stove would not cease to function mm-hmm. and does not cease to function.
Luke, you're a charming person. I've never seen someone who was losing a case so badly come back so hard. That was incredible.
Thank you.
I mean, that was one of the greatest saves I've ever seen in the history of Judge John Hodgman.
I was hoping he hadn't put that one together. I am open to a provision in your ruling, Your Honor, that we also must require a generator if we are to go the route of a pellet stove.
That would rather decrease the amount of savings that you would enjoy.
It sure mm-hmm. would.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a factor.
Yeah. Luke, you had an unrelated experience with the big chicken barn. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That would be main content, correct?
That would be.
All right.
Main.
So we'll save that for the surprise post-credit sequence. I think I've heard everything I need to in order to hear my decision. I'll be back in a moment. I'm going to go stoke my fire, warm up, and I'll be back in a moment with my decision.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Luke, how are you feeling about your chances?
I feel like my final argument was pretty sound, but I know that there is a precedent to not rule for the husbands.
Well, there's a precedent that the husbands are wrong.
That's true.
I wouldn't say that it's something that we're forcing on the situations, something the situations are forcing on us.
That's very true.
Elena, how are you feeling about your chances?
Well, I gotta say, I was feeling very confident up until the last there.
Well, we'll see what Judge Hodgman has to say about all this when we come back in just a second on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom and presents his verdict.
So I turn to some people I know who live in cold climes and live with wood stoves and pellet stoves as part of their lives. If you were listening last week, in anticipation of this case, I threw to Joel Mann, our wintertime and sometimes summertime producer over there at WERU in Orland, Maine. I said, wood stove or pellet stove? And he said then, and he reiterated in his text to me now, pellet stove, because of, and then he sent me a bunch of spider emojis because he's so scared. Because he said last week, he's scared of spiders living in the woodpile.
And ticks.
And ticks and moss and all kinds of Vermont junk that can find its way in the woodpile. You never know. You know, my uncle-in-law Ted and his woodpile had a red squirrel living in there inside the house. And he liked it. He fed the squirrel. It was not a good idea. Not a good idea. And then I turned to David LeBlanc, who until about a year and a half ago was our very, very dear friend, still is, but was our neighbor across the road in Western Massachusetts. And David LeBlanc has a home. This is not as far north, obviously, as West Cornhole, Vermont or anything, but this is pretty, you know, they have winters there, real winters, not far from Brattleboro. David LeBlanc's home is heated entirely by, guess what, a wood stove. Entirely. No backup.
Yeah.
Or I should say, the backup is the wood stove, because the wood stove, just you burn wood in it and it works. He built his own house, however, and it is tight as a tick, not the kind that sneaks into a wood pile, but the kind, the metaphor that means it's very, very well insulated, and they have big windows facing to the south. And David LeBlanc is very pro-wood for a lot of the reasons that we talked about today, that Luke, you brought up at the last second, right? Which is that the pellets are made somewhere. They come in bags that need to be recycled. The pellet stove needs electricity. So if your power goes out and you don't have a generator, then you're stuck and you don't have that heat. All of those arguments. And also the natural pleasure of stacking wood and the tactile element of having wood and cutting wood and burning wood and everything else. And they've got a glass-fronted wood stove. I've seen it. It's very pretty. But the thing that struck me is that I asked him how this is whole source of heat for the winter. You know how many cords he burns per winter? 2.5.
Wow.
2.5 cords. That is half of what you are burning.
Yeah.
Because I will give you this, Elena. The Vigilant 77 is a piece of junk. The Vigilant 77 is not vigilant at all. It is totally distracted as it is letting heat seep out of all the cracks that I can see in this photo. The Vigilant 77 is too small. The Vigilant 77 is too old. Jesse Thorne, you were going to say something earlier about wood stoves.
Sorry, the dog came in the chat.
I'm sorry.
Look.
The dog is... Lamb Chop, what are you doing?
Lamb Chop. Lamb Chop is here in justice. Lamb Chop is hearing justice coming down, and I don't blame Lamb Chop for coming in.
Lamb Chop's just checking in to make sure Luke's okay.
I know. Lamb Chop came in to lick the tears off of Luke's face. And I'll tell you what, Lamb Chop is lucky that those tears aren't frozen icicles, because the Vigilant 77 is an old piece of iron, and I know old things are supposed to be great, but I know that Jesse knows. Jesse, you were going to point something out earlier, and I asked you to hold on to it for a second, which is what? About wood stoves.
Wood stove technology has come a long way in recent years and recent decades, to the point where, wood stoves are no longer just a big chunk of metal that you throw wood into. They're sophisticated appliances designed to maximize the efficiency of heating and the efficiency of the fuel use.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of baffles and secondary air sources. And by this, I mean tubes. Not mechanical stuff that can break down. They are sophisticated compared to the Vigilant 77, but there's still dumb boxes that you burn fire in, but you burn that fire much, much, much more efficiently. The Department of Energy itself, energy.gov, will attest there are wood stoves that definitely rival that 85% heat efficiency of a pellet stove. And you can get them with catalytic converters in them that will really reduce pollution. Totally comparable in terms of heat efficiency and even in air pollution. And they have them with glass, and you can see the wood burning nicely. And I saw what that guy was showing me at Embers Fireplaces and Lifestyle in Denver, Colorado, that side-by-side comparison. I saw that pellet stove burning. It's not pretty. It was not pretty. I'm sorry. Humans have been looking at fires burning for as long as we've had fire, because it is a beautiful thing to look at.
And they've been looking at beautiful fires burning while playing Nintendo since the early 1980s.
It's true. It's true. And you have a fan that makes noise. You're heating your house by convection heat, whereas a wood stove is radiant heat. And I regret to inform you, Elena, that the technology of the wood stove has caught up with the convenience of the pellet stove. And indeed, a good new wood stove can have a 9 to 10 hour burn without being touched. My friend David LeBlanc leaves that burning overnight, and listen to what he said. This is a true thing he said to me. There was a 20 degree Fahrenheit below zero wind chill last night, and we get up in the morning and the house is 70 degrees and the wood stove is just ashes. It just burns overnight. So Elena, you are correct. The Vigilant 77, with all of its attendant sentimental attractions, it's junk. Throw it away. If you are going to invest in a new appliance, and I believe that you have to do it, I will resort to my bias and Luke's love for wood and say, make it a wood stove. You moved to Vermont. Pellet stoves are for retirees. I'm sorry, you're not there yet. I don't like to say this, but it's true. Your young people who moved to Vermont. Luke works on a farm. This is the lifestyle you chose.
Yeah.
Luke, if I rule in your favor, though, you've got to earn this.
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't want to represent like I'm out there chopping wood. That has not yet happened. We get green wood delivered, but it's cut for fireplaces. And then we stack it. Or I should say, my wife leads the stacking, because it's her passion to stack these beehives, and they look amazing. And there's something so, so special about laying down wood in the spring that you know you're not even going to touch until this winter or maybe the next winter. When you are heating with wood in a place like Vermont, you are directly helping local companies. Not that the pellet dispensary is some kind of like predatory Walmart or anything. I don't know what they're all about. But Paul Poole's 15 minutes down the road, he's counting on you to buy that wood. You can buy more wood from him. You can buy green wood from him earlier in the year and I bet get a better price. And then stack it. And then season it. Read that book, Norwegian Wood. Not the Murakami novel, which is also called Norwegian Wood, which is great. I'm talking about the one about stacking wood. And the feeling of connection. I'll just read you a quote that I'll leave you with this. This is a quote from Ruben Knutsen in this book, Norwegian Wood, Chopping, Stacking, and Drying Wood the Scandinavian Way. And he stacks these beehives of wood in his house there, somewhere in Scandinavia, I don't remember where. And he says, it's a part of the great yearly cycle of things, and wood lets you feel as though you're part of it all. A log that is heavy and damp puts you in direct touch with spring. It's a harbinger, a kind of preparation, a hint of something good in the winter that lies ahead. But there's nothing sentimental about it. I never shed any tears about burning the perfect log. It's not such a bad idea to have this kind of relationship with something that is as fleeting as life itself. And I'm telling you right now, Ruben Knutsen is a liar. I bet he's shed a tear over burning the perfect log. It's a beautiful thing. It's a perfect log that you seasoned. I'll tell you one thing no one's ever done, shed a tear over burning a pellet. And certainly, certainly no one's ever jumped up and down with joy when their electricity goes out and their pellet burner can't heat the house anymore and they got to switch over to propane. You don't have to get a generator if you get a wood-burning stove. And for that reason alone, I would say go ahead and do it. But mostly, lean into the beauty of the life you have chosen. Elena, I'm sorry. I'm finding in favor of Luke with the obvious caveat. Get a good one and do a better job. This is the sound of a gavel. Judge John Hodgman rules that is all.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Elena, how are you feeling?
A little deflated, but I'm glad we'll be investing in a more efficient future and a more eco-friendly one at that.
Luke, how are you feeling in triumph?
Triumphant. I feel good. I feel good. I am humbled by John's friend who only uses 2.5 cords of wood. I mean, it's like, I know I'm stacking way more wood than I need to be. And so, you know, we only recently bought our house. So I'm really working on doing what I can to make it as, you know, efficient heat wise and, you know, on my own body as possible. So yeah, you know, getting a better wood stove is definitely the right route to go.
Luke, Elena, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Another Judge John Hodgman case in the books. Before we dispense swift justice, we want to thank Jonathan Arbogast and Karen Costin for the inspiration behind this week's episode titled Logging a Case in Appellate Court. If you would like to name a future episode like Judge John Hodgman on Facebook, we regularly put out our calls for submissions there. You can follow us on Twitter at Jesse Thorne and at Hodgman. Hashtag your Judge John Hodgman tweets, hashtag JJHO. And check out the Maximum Fun subreddit. That's MaximumFun.reddit.com if you want to chat about this episode. We're on Instagram at Judge John Hodgman. Make sure to follow us there for evidence and other fun stuff. We're also personally on Instagram at John Hodgman and at put.this.on. Our producer is the ever capable Ms. Jennifer Marmer. Now, swift justice, where we answer your small disputes with quick judgment. Scott says, I think unsalted saltines should be called eens. This annoys my wife.
There's nothing inconsistent between those two sentences.
That's it for this week's episode. Submit your cases at MaximumFun.org/JJHO or email Hodgman at MaximumFun.org. Remember, no case is too small, as we just learned. We'll see you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Post-credit surprise sequence. Hey, everybody. Listener Natalie, as you've been waiting to hear, chimed in with a third set of lyrics to Jess Fox's garlic on my flapsteak song. I want to thank all of you who sent in lyrics, especially those of you who sent them in and sang them. The contest is over. Natalie, please write me at Hodgman@MaximumFun.org and claim something off the MaxFunStore.com website for me to send to you. But without further ado, and definitely without any further post-credit surprise sequences after this song, don't even listen after this song. Just turn it off. There will be nothing after Natalie's rendition of Garlic on My Flapsteak.
And now, coming to you a cappella from the Circle City, this one's going out coast to coast, podcasting from Australia to Greenland, and all you rollicking litigants at sea. We got fresh garlic on the flapsteak in our pan. Save some for Gene Grigio and Joel the main man. And in summertime and fun time, Monty too. It's fresh garlic on the flapsteak, Judge John Hodgman style, to you. Fresh garlic on my flapsteak, come on through. Iron skillet justice just for you. Satsumas and scallops on the side. The court will be in session nationwide. A podcast or a kitchen, either is fine. We've got disputes to settle and the crux is mine. So with Jennifer and Jesse and Summer Lord, fresh garlic on my flapsteak, that's my court. 500 cases have gone by, from hot dogs to robots to pizza and trash. And all these weird dads are sweeter than pie. I might have some Kung Pao chicken while my skillet gravy thickens. Spouses have systems, and friends and neighbors, maybe even their cousins. They all have gripes with an obscure reference, and August is wrong. I'm judging folks of all types. Abide by my verdict, win or defeat. Swearing by whatever, have a seat. This rollicking boat trip has been quite a ride. It's better in the courtroom, come inside. Tell me your stories and I'll tell you more. No specificity of narrative is a bore. The sound of my gavel from winter to fall. Fresh garlic on my flapsteak, that is all. Wait, did you say scallops?
Okay, Luke, it's a surprise post-credit sequence. You have a story about the Big Chicken Barn in Ellsworth. You have 30 seconds to tell it. Get ready and go.
When I was a punk teenager, I stole a magnet from the Big Chicken Barn in Maine. The magnet has been on my fridge ever since then, and I feel really bad about it. The only reason I stole it was because it was in a box of magnets for sale, and I didn't want all the magnets. I just wanted the one. It has a picture of a sheep on it, and it says, "Lay dirty."
With 2 seconds to spare, one of the greatest stories on Judge John Hodgman of all time. Please take a picture of the magnet and send it to us. Oh, there you go. That's time's up for you, Luke. Thanks, Luke and Elena. Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.